This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Honalee Culpepper, director of Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard, and you are listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Line, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to Star Trek Picard. I'm Justin Ozer, and join with me today are my co-hosts, Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi and Brandon Shea Matala, either of which might just be androids. So Chrissy, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. It's starting to get warm here in Michigan, so that's always nice. And of course, we have more time at home right now, so I can enjoy the nice weather in my backyard.
Yeah, we're recording this on the first day of spring, right?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, so nice time for that.
But I'm sad because there's only one more Picard episode for a while.
I know, yeah. Season finale next week. Brandon, how you doing?
Thank you for coming, everyone.
Oh no, he's fallen asleep. Take him to sick bay.
I look, I know I'm crossing some boundaries here and whatnot, but I love you, J.O.
Okay.
You don't have to tell me that you love me unless you really want to.
I love you too.
Oh, thank you.
I'm walking away now.
Yep. I'm doing okay. We were talking before the mic. I'm kind of losing my mind over all this coronavirus news, but I deleted some social media apps today, so I'm just taking a little bit of break because it's just constant news. So,
yeah, you got to take care of your mental health and not look at it every 5 minutes if you can.
Yeah.
And listeners, I know it's, you know, basically about the only story going on right now, but hopefully this podcast where we talk about Picard can help keep your mind off that for 2+ hours. That's our usual guarantee.
Yes.
Definitely.
But good, like, for the listeners, like, we hope that we can bring you some solace if you guys are stuck at home and whatnot. I know there's a lot of people stuck at home. I saw the greatest meme out there. It had a picture of Picard, and it said, our grandparents were called to save the world by going to war, and you're called to save the world by sitting on your couch and watch Star Trek. We can do this, people.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And we're all at home, too, because we always do this podcast from home.
Yeah.
Okay, so today we'll be discussing the 9th episode of Picard, Et in Arcadia Ego, Part 1. Chrissy, hope I got that right.
Sounds good to me.
All right, perfect. So, and we'll have in a little bit a segment with Chrissy talking about that title and where it comes from. But first, let's get general thoughts on Episode 9 of Picard. So, Chrissy, why don't you get us started on that?
Sure. To some extent, I feel like I say the same thing every week. This was a really great episode.
Okay.
I do think this one, you got to watch it a couple of times in order to catch everything that's going on. And in the wonderful Star Trek tradition, it has all these heavy references to literature and art that if you get it, it gives you, if you're aware of it, it gives you more feel for what's going on. But if you're not aware of it, you don't lose anything. So it's good.
Yeah. And there were definitely some deep ones that we were discussing that we'll get to. So, Brandon, general thoughts on this one?
So, there's a lot of really great stuff in this one here. But my initial watch, after the first time I watched it, I turned it off. And I'm like, this is my least favorite episode of the series so far. And every subsequent rewatch, I enjoyed it less and less. You know, like, watching it over and over again. I got a lot of issues with this episode, and you might think they're minor things, but to me, there's a lot of really frustrating stuff in this episode. There's a lot of great stuff, but, you know, some people have said to me, well, it's just because it's part one. And it's like, yeah, I realize they're calling it part one, but this is not part one. This is part nine, okay? And to have, for me, to have this many things frustrate me this late in the game, I'm cautiously going into the final episode. And it's also very frustrating because after my initial watch of last week's episode, like my first watch, I'm like, that's the best episode of the season so far. And every time I watched it again, I enjoyed it more. So I had the complete opposite experience this week as to last week's episode.
It's funny. I think I've gotten to know the kinds of things you're looking for and how you'll react to things. Because as I was watching it, I was like, I know Brandon will have an issue with that and that and that and that. And it'll probably be an episode he doesn't like very much. That's cool. But yeah, so for my thoughts, like the first time that I watched it, like I was kind of trying to take in and digest the stuff. And it's been like a couple of episodes that I've seen previously in the season where I've been like, I'm not quite sure what I think about that or some of the decisions or what happened, but then I rewatched it today and took notes and all that. And I was like, okay, I'm getting more into this. I like it more. I like more what I'm seeing. So I guess opposite to you, Brandon, I liked it more the second time. I mean, I think it's not my favorite episode of the season. It's not my least favorite either, but I did actually enjoy it quite a bit. And I'm sure we'll get into all the juicy details.
Yeah. And I mean, as I was talking about the other week there, I mean, so we didn't get Angel One, but I mean, hey, on the plus side, we got Justice.
For sure.
They're all running around.
Well, Justice Light. I think they had a few more clothes than Justice, but...
So. A little bit.
Yeah. A little bit. So, actually, before we get into, you know, favorite moments and other things, we usually have Chrissy's History Corner a little later, but I wanted to pull something up here and call it Chrissy's Art History Corner because it relates to the episode title. So, Chrissy, do you want to talk about that for a little bit?
Sure. First thing I'm going to do is say that I do not specialize in art history. I tell my students, when I teach the Renaissance, I know two things about art history and I put them in that lecture and that's it. Amusingly enough, I'm going to be talking about one of those in a little bit. It's not this, but a different element. So because I'm not an art historian, I went to one of my colleagues at one of the schools where I work and asked her about it. And she gave me some interesting tidbits. And so I just want to give her a shout out, if that's all right. Her name's Sherry Archer. And she is an adjunct like me, but she's a wonderful artist and she teaches art history. And she has a YouTube channel called Sherry Makes Stuff. And with everything that's going on, if you're so inclined, I would say take it a look.
She's probably about the right age that she could have a grandchild named Henry.
Oh,
maybe I'm not getting you lost what you're me trying there. To put together there.
What's her last name?
Oh, gods. Yeah, you're right.
Archer.
I didn't even go there. Oh, that's funny.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, beautiful. Okay. Right. Okay. So first of all, the title, Et in Arcadia Ego, is Latin in the long tradition of Star Trek Latin titles. It means, and I am in Arcadia, or I am also in Arcadia, depending on where you want to put the verb.
What is Arcadia?
Right. Well, in terms of what Arcadia is,
getting to it. Be patient.
Tell me now.
The old jokes. How hot is it? Yeah. Right. So Arcadia is the central area of Greece on the Peloponnesian part of the peninsula. So the southern part, the one that's kind of splayed and looks like a hand.
The little fingers. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the middle of that. So there were people that lived there in the classical period, of course. But they had a very different lifestyle than most of the other Greek city-states because they didn't have direct access to a coastline. So they are thought of as these nomadic shepherds that are living in an unspoiled wilderness. So when you hear Arcadia talked about, it's supposed to be, I wouldn't go so far as to say an Eden, but it's supposed to be a better life. Now, in terms of historical reality... Okay, so that's how they're perceived. The historical reality...
Almost like a utopia, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Both in both senses, in that the utopos, the good place, and utopos, the place that does not exist. So, right, so the historical reality is that there were a collection of city-states that lived there, and they did... they had a war with the Spartans and were able to maintain their independence. It was before the Spartans got really, really good at war, so they defeated them. and then they were involved in the Persian and Peloponnesian wars with the other Greek city-states. And so That's what Arcadia is in reality. Now for the art stuff. The most common reference I have seen to this is to a painting by Nicolas Poussin, which was painted between 1637 and 1638. And there is another painting by an artist named Guercino, and that was painted in the early 1620s. They're both what are called memento mori, which basically means they are artistic representations of death. Okay. And the I in the title is often interpreted to refer to death, because even in a perfect or idyllic setting, death still exists. Okay. This subject was also picked up in some other paintings and sculptures as well. And I didn't describe the painting, but it's been going around a lot. It's some shepherds looking at a grave, a tombstone, or a raised grave. I'm not really sure which. And getting into the art part, okay. And this is where Sherry came in. The Poussin painting is in what's called the French Baroque style, which uses the emphasis of light and darkness. So where it's very light, it's supposed to represent focal points of the painting, but you're also supposed to focus on the dark and how they interact. And a lot of times there's a religious connotation to that about good and evil and that kind of thing, because it was that era of the Renaissance. And French Baroque often puts figures outdoors because it likes to reflect, the artists like to reflect older Renaissance styles. So history, art history. I think as we go here, the painting and the context of who the Arcadians actually were resonated with me as I was watching the episode the second time once I got this laid out. So hopefully it does for other people too, now that you've heard about it.
Yeah, and I wanted to, it does have to do with the title, but I wanted to make sure that we talked about it because I wondered what relevance it might have on the discussion this week or next week. So just wanted to get that out there.
I think so.
And we can talk maybe more about the significance of choosing that title a bit later, but let's actually now go to, so thank you, Chrissy and your friend Sherry for, for the information on that. That was great. Okay. So let's talk about our favorite moments from the episode. So Brandon, I'll have you go first.
I loved the music in this episode. The music was top notch right from the beginning with the previously on Picard music. You know, the tricorder scene where Girardi is talking with Picard after he wakes up, all the way to the end when they're taking Picard and they're going to be putting him under the house arrest. I thought the music was top notch the entire episode. And that's definitely my standout thing for this. I loved it, loved it, loved it.
Oh, so glad to hear that. Awesome. Yeah. And as we talk here, we haven't seen the second half soundtrack come out early like the first half did, which is fine. So we won't get spoilers, but I'm hoping and anticipating that'll come out soon. But yeah, I was noticing that too, Brandon. The music was just, it was really good. Really, really good. For sure. Jeff Russo's doing a great job. So Chrissy, favorite moment?
Well, I have to go with what is perhaps the obvious one, but listeners will recall that I predicted that the shadowed face would be Dr. Soong, and I was half right. So that works. my favorite moment is the reveal of Soong the Younger. Okay. Not just because of what it is, but because, as you guys know, I sit and watch this for the first time at the dinner table with my family, and my mother's sitting there, and she goes, "Wait, who's that?" And she went, "Oh my God." And pushed her chair back and was like, it's Data. So that will always be associated with this in my mind now. And I love it.
Oh, nice. That's really nice. Yeah. And for me, unlike the first one where Jerry Ryan came on, where I was like, oh, I thought you'd be in the next episode. I was actually watching and I saw, oh, guest star Brent Spiner. Okay. So he is in this. And then I thought that meant like Noonien Soong. Anyway, Brandon, we'll talk about like the Soong stuff a little bit later, because I'm sure we can get into that quite a bit.
Well, I just want to, adding on to that, because you said, I saw his name in the main title credits again. I had no idea he was going to be in this episode. So again, like they're doing their best to keep some of these reveals secret. And then to like have the name in the opening credits, I'm like, oh, well, okay. You know, and
it's a contractual thing.
Yeah.
But I would, but if they have to do that, I would like it if that is in the teaser or something. But the structure of the episode, they couldn't do it that way. But yeah. I can totally see that. And then I was like, oh, that's cool. Actually, I was a little bit spoiled because I try not to look at news or anything, but I looked and I saw something about surprise guest star. And I was like, oh, damn, that might be a spoiler. And I wasn't sure. I was like, I don't know who that could be. But yeah. So, yeah, it was one of those things, again, where you knew beforehand.
Right. And it could have been just another flashback of Data in a dream or something like that. Yeah. But still, true, not knowing that he was going to be in there, to have his name show up there, right, like, was kind of like, oh. Oh, well, like in, like if you go back to Defiant, right, the episode of Deep Space Nine, like Riker's in the teaser, right? And even when they give his credit, special guest star Jonathan Frakes, if I remember correctly, it just says as Riker, right?
It might. I don't recall.
I don't remember
what
that looking, but yeah.
So they don't give the spoiler as to it being Thomas Riker, which keeps the spoiler for the people who haven't seen it yet. Because I remember the first time I saw that, I had no clue what was going on.
No.
Until for some reason, as soon as he ripped off the beards, I'm like, I knew. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is going to turn out to be Thomas. And then they revealed it right then. But I remember watching that episode live, you know, and yeah, so...
Okay, so my favorite moment, I mean, I guess we already talked about it a little bit with what you were joking about, Brendan, but I really love that moment between Picard and Raffi where, you know, she's kind of really saying what he means to her. Mm-hmm. And for Picard, it's like he has this reserve and he's like, okay, and he's kind of walking away, but then he says, I love you too. There was just something about that just like, I love that moment and it warmed my heart. So that was probably the favorite moment in the episode.
I can see a lot of people having problems with that moment. I liked it a lot. And again, the reason why I liked it is because Picard would never see it first because, again, he's been her superior officer. And while neither of them are in Starfleet...
He's more reserved in his feelings as
well. He's also more reserved in his feelings. Yes, absolutely. But while neither of them are in Starfleet anymore... It's got to be Raffi that says something like that first. It's got to be Troy that says that first. You know, it's got to be somebody else that says that first to him because of who Picard is. And it does catch him a little bit off guard, but, you know, he does feel the same. And for him to reciprocate, and I think he was just teasing her a little bit. Like, my interpretation is that he was teasing her a bit when she's you don't have to say it back unless you really want to. And then he slowly walks away and then calls back to her. Like, that's just a little teasing is how I interpret it. But
yeah, yeah, exactly. I like that. Okay, so now I've gone through favorite moments. Let's dive into some specific topics about the episode. So let's start out by talking about the opening scene, which is basically where you see La Sirena in the transwarp conduit coming out to see this planet, Coppelius, and they're kind of like on approach, and they get hit with these giant space flowers that bring them down. And there's also in that part where Girardi kind of finds out about Picard's illness, so Picard has to address it with the crew. That's kind of what I had in this section. There may be more going on.
So I want to point out that a little thing that I'm disappointed about is that they've stopped with this episode their historical last seven episodes of not having a flashback. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of been a staple of this show and something that I found really enjoyable. And even starting this episode with a flashback wouldn't have taken anything away, I don't think, from this, because the last episode ended with them entering the Borg corridor, and they could have started with the flashback and then just continued on with this. Yeah. I don't know. It's just...
They could have... I noticed that as well, but let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
If you were to write a flashback for this episode, what would it have been about?
I don't know, because we don't know now, but would have been, if I had to write an episode here, it would... a scene, it would have been Maddox coming to this planet and meeting Soong. Something like that would have been my flashback that I would have written here.
Oh, okay. And and then that would you'd have the surprise of seeing Brent Spiner.
Yeah. So if I had to write something, it would probably be that.
And you'd have it before the credits too. So
yeah.
See, I was thinking about it, and I would have actually liked to see a flashback to something that would tease out about these other like higher sentient life forms or something. But I like your one about the Maddox and so on.
See, if they don't do a flashback next episode, which I'm guessing they're not, then that's where they could put the flashback to these sentient robots that are out there or whatever. Because we're going to see them next episode, right? So
they're coming.
Maybe, or next season.
But I don't know about that. We'll see. But Chrissy, like your general thoughts about kind of like this opening sequence as they approach the planet and Picard is kind of addressing his illness to the crew.
The issue of Picard wanting to be treated as if he were not ill really resonated with me because I have dealt with declining family members and family members with mental illness and physical illness. And if there's anything that's consistent with all of that, it's don't treat me differently until it is absolutely utterly necessary. So that very much resonated with me, and it felt true.
Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting with this, with them bringing it up now, because now looking back at 9 episodes, we got one more to go next week for the season, but nobody addressed the fact that this is why he's been acting the way he is. Right? Like, so nothing was like spoken about. Nobody really spoke about it. There was no behind the scenes discussion with Picard away from there where Raffi's talking with Girardi or something like that, where they're like, oh, well, that explains this. So it's like, is his behavior a result of this mental illness that he has? And then also, like, you know, nobody said a line, like, even I would have expect Raffi to at least from her as a character to have some kind of frustrated comment of like, why did you not give this? Why did you not think this was important information for us to know?
I don't know if she would do that in the moment because she's just really sad in knowing this all of a sudden that she didn't know before.
Yeah. Well, it could be a response to that. But she turned pretty quick when he brought Soji on board last episode. Right, where she got pretty angry pretty quickly by having her on, that to me it also would have seemed in character for her to do that.
But like, if there's somebody that like you've had certain frustrations with and all of a sudden that person tells you they have a terminal illness, I would think probably your reaction wouldn't be to get frustrated or angry, but to be, you know, sad and wanting to see what you could do because they're facing something so difficult. But
and they're, that's interesting. They're in the middle of a mess right now, so it may not even be, or excuse me, right at that moment. So that might not even occur to her. Like, oh, this is why he's been acting that way. You know, it's just come back to that later.
And it's kind of an open question what influence his illness has. I do have to ask a question because, and this might be on your list, Brandon, but like, so they're, you know, like they're approaching the planet, these flowers come in and or one of them like kind of swallows up La Sirena and they lose power. I think at that point. Yep. And then Picard seems almost like he's possessed and saying like, thank you for coming everyone. And he's kind of unconscious. I wasn't sure what to make of that. Cause I thought you'd find out later that one of the synths or something somehow had like taken over his mind and was giving a message, but
that's exactly.
I don't feel like they really explained it.
Yeah. I had that down. What does that mean? What do you think that means? Because I can't even guess. Like, that's like a, that's what I totally thought when he started saying that. I'm like, something has possessed him. And then that's not the case.
But then, like, right after that, he's unconscious. And then you see, like, these flashes back to the vineyard. And he's talking with Dr. Benayoun about the illness. So it's, like, on his mind or something. Or they're reminding you of that. So I was almost thinking, like, something, this illness is doing something to him so that there's something coming back from the past that he's all of a sudden just like saying for some reason. Like there's, I feel like maybe they'll explain something in the next episode, but I was kind of surprised they didn't this one because I saw that and I was like, people can tell that there's something wrong and they find this illness, but it's not like completely connected.
Right. And for tone and pacing of the show, it feels really weird for me that they had those direct flashbacks of going to Picard's vineyard, the conversation with the doctor and him.
Yeah, I would have thought that should have been previously in the previous
on Trek FM. Not Trek FM, sorry. Previously on Star Trek, Picard. So, yes.
Oh, we're taking over that segment. Yes. Yeah.
Because that's where they want to remind us that that's what's going on, is he's got an illness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the previously on is where
I took it as that's a flash that was in Picard's mind
as
while he was unconscious.
Right. But, yeah. It didn't need to be there. It should have been in the previously on.
Well, the only thing I would say about that is at whatever point you're binge watching it, the previously ons might not be there anymore.
But if you're binge watching this, future. Then that wasn't 9 weeks ago that you saw this, right?
True.
So, yeah.
devil's advocate, as always.
I think they'll always have those, like, they have them on the Blu-rays for Discovery.
Oh, they do? Okay. You know, I have the Blu-rays for Discovery, but it's so much easier to just turn on the app that I haven't actually watched the discs.
I just like the special features, and the quality is a little bit better.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but like, also in this scene, they're coming out of the conduit. There's Narek's ship. I have to say, La Sirena is super maneuverable. I was like, whoa, what they're doing there. So you have like all that stuff going on, and Narek's ship and the Borg cube. So I kind of like that they were just kind of like, just bring that all together and then take them to the planet.
I just want to say one thing. Was anybody else bothered by the fact that all the power's off on the spaceship and he's sitting there lighting a lighter and sucking up oxygen with fire?
No, because it's a pretty large interior.
I know.
I think they're anticipating they'll have some hours of oxygen, even if life support's off. So yeah. I didn't, you know. Yeah, if it was like a small room.
Yeah.
But I thought it... Like, it worked for me, that first scene. I did think it was interesting that Jurati comes to the bridge and she's like, what happened to going to Deep Space 12? Am I still under arrest?
That is wonderful. Okay, that is wonderful, because that's the kind of thing, and I want to compare that to something else, because Jurati doesn't know that they've made that decision. Okay, mm-hmm. And so that is a problem with a lot of writing, is that people jump to conclusions that they shouldn't have, and they shouldn't have the ability to jump that conclusion. And this is a situation where it's good. Jurati doesn't know what happened, because they made that decision quickly, and it's only been 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
True.
Now, here's the thing. They've jumped to the conclusion that this is Narek chasing them, but none of these people should know that this is Narek chasing them. Okay, because
I think they're just assuming it because he's the only one that was tailing them.
Well, they don't. Again, that's the thing. They don't know who it is, though, right? They've got no way to know that, because he hasn't talked to them. It's just been a ship that followed them.
Yeah, but if somebody had been following you, and then all of a sudden it seems like they shouldn't know where you are, but they are, you would assume that it's whoever was following you before. Yeah.
Originally they don't know that it's Narek, even from episode 7, Nepenthe. When he started following them.
Well, they don't say Narek in that scene. They just say the snakehead ship.
But the way that Soji reacts, right? She's like, he's tricking us. So this episode is about Soji. A lot of it is coming to terms with her dealing with Narek. She's angry and wants to kill him. And so for her to say he's tricking her is based on her interactions with Narek, right? Because he has been tricking her this whole time. And this is just another trick that he's performing on her.
Well, I think it would be reasonable for her to just assume that it was Narek, as opposed to anyone else, you know, except maybe his sister. But she didn't have the interactions with anybody else that she did with him.
Yeah, there's some things I'll have to say about this scene when we get to canon connections and stuff. But anything else on, like, the opening scene that kind of takes us down to the planet?
I got a question about these flowers, these orchids that are there. So they've got these orchids that come up and they take the ships down. They crash to the planet. Okay. So they're effective in dismantling the ships, right? But like, is this supposed to be a defense mechanism for the planet? Because like, nobody dies, right? They bring all these people down to the planet. So if their planet's about to be attacked, everybody's now on the planet and they're not really set up to defend themselves even more down there, right?
They don't really have like a planetary defense system. I took it as they have this because for the rare visitor that they might get, they want to take down the ship and question them and see what they're doing there and what's going on. And that they want to try not to kill anybody if they can help it.
Right. But they've never had to deal with this before, because they say later on they've never had any prisoners. But again, they just come up there and they do it. There's no communication. They just take these ships out. Right? They're having a battle in orbit, but they just take all three of these ships out.
Well, maybe it was the first time they'd used them.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know what they were going to do.
I think it is. Yeah. But I thought it was... I kind of liked it, the space flower.
Yeah, they're neat.
But I just kind of like seeing it.
Me, my wife, my daughter, when the Borg cube came out of the conduit, we were all just like, whoa!
Yes.
Right? Like, so there's a lot of great stuff.
It looked really cool. It looked cool.
It's supposed to be broken. It's not broken.
Yeah. Okay. So should we talk about what we see on the planet Coppelius, which is pretty much the rest of the episode, but we'll break it into little parts. Okay. So we see this planet, Coppelius. So they, you know, in great Star Trek tradition, they have to hike for, you know, 5 kilometers to get there, to get their exercise. So basically, you know, I think we didn't know before this episode what we would see. I think based on the last episode, we knew that there would be at least two different kinds of these androids. It turns out there's more kinds and different varieties. It seems like along the spectrum between like a Data-like android and a more Dodge or Soji-like android. Uh-huh. I kind of liked seeing the kind of variety of different androids in this society. But I wanted to see what you guys thought, Chrissy, just of like just seeing all those different synths in general.
I was surprised at how many there were.
How many do you think there were?
Well, there looked 50, to be quite maybe? A bit. That last shot when they were all talking and they mm-hmm. panned up and they were going yeah. through the building, there's probably a couple hundred there.
You think that many?
There looked to yeah. be quite a lot because, you know, I would say at least 100.
Okay. Well, I was thinking 40 or 50, but 100 could be. So there's a sizable number.
Yeah.
They've been making them for a while.
We don't know how many fit on the La Serena, and they did say they would take
it's
all
It's a
of
fairly
them.
Big ship. Yeah. I think they could take a few hundred yeah. on there.
But there's a lot. I was really expecting there to be maybe like a half a dozen. So
apparently they've just been keeping busy like building them.
Yeah.
And I think an interesting thing was on the ready room at they had Issa Briones, who was basically saying like not only have they been built by like Maddox and Sung, but like the synths themselves are building other synths as well. Which I thought was interesting. I wouldn't have thought that based on the episode. So like they've got this whole thing going over a period of years where they're building them and they have this society and they're, I don't know, playing ball and doing all kinds of stuff. Hope they don't get bored. But yeah, I was just curious like about this whole kind of little mini society that's there. What you guys think?
That's an important element. If the synths are building other synths, that is for all mm-hmm. intents and purposes, them reproducing themselves, which makes them
yeah, like
all
did.
The more equal to any other biological species.
Mm.
And that's one of the elements of when you talk about in Quality of Life. No, the episode with the exocomps.
Quality of
Life. Quality of Life. Okay. So there's that scene between Data and Crusher when he asks, how do you define life? And she goes down the list. And I don't know if reproducing themselves is on the list, but if it isn't, it should be. I keep coming back to that list with this show.
Yeah, and I mean, it's an interesting list in that episode because there's certainly like a debate that still goes on, like what is life mm-hmm. and what do you need to be life? Is a virus life? Like maybe, maybe not. You know, there's like these little divisions, but mm-hmm. of what life actually is. Yeah, but it is interesting and maybe gets to the question of whether you consider something life. So Brandon, like, what did you think just generally about this kind of little synth society, Synthville, as Rafi calls it?
So watching this, it just opens up a whole can of worms of questions for me, seeing this, that I don't think we're going to get answers for. And, you know, they can say whatever they want on the ready room. But if you have to say something on the ready room to make something make sense here, then that's not right. Something's missing.
I don't think you need that to make sense.
I don't
sense.
Think so
it was just
either.
Something adding, and I was like, oh.
But
okay.
I mean, like, I go back to O, where I thought she was Vulcan. You guys thought she was Romulan. Everybody's like, well, she's Romulan because Jonathan Frakes says she was on the thing. Well, no, we turned out she's half Romulan, half Vulcan. Half, so it's like, yeah. Okay, whatever.
Everyone's right.
Everybody's right. But
everybody's half right.
Like, I wrote down because I have so many questions on this here. So, like, first and foremost, that I don't think we're going to get an answer for, and I'm pretty sure is probably not going to be made clear upon a rewatch. So why does Maddox need money from Bejazel? Like, looking at this planet, why? Like, I'm going back to that because that's a huge motivating factor for things.
Help to answer that for you. Let me help to answer that for you, because there's a couple of things that are going on here, right? Like, when you see Maddox in Stardust City Rag, he hasn't been on Coppelius for a while. I think they say something in the episode that I think after Dodge and Soji were sent out that Maddox left. So he's been somewhere else because he wants them to investigate the ban. But I think, because I don't know if it's made clear like what he's doing in this period of time, but he has this other lab somewhere, right? And I don't know if that's supposed to be a ruse or whatever to throw them off the trail, but he needs money to build that lab or to get that other thing going that's away from here, because he's not on this planet for, I think, at least a couple of years by this point.
Okay, so that's not the impression that I got from it, because when Soji and Dodge have been on Synthville before, they know who they are. They asked them.
They were born there, but they left like 3 years ago.
I don't think so. Because they say, have you completed your mission? Right. So like they ask her directly if they completed their mission. So these guys know what their mission was.
Yeah. But Soji does say at one point, I was born here, but I don't think I stayed very long before I left.
Okay.
I think she's been gone for a couple of years at least.
Yeah. So maybe we'll watch this on a rewatch, but right now I'm like, to me, okay. So right there, that doesn't seem to be making a lot of sense to me. So, and I'll admit that I haven't watched Stardust City Rag since we talked about it. Right. So
if it weren't for Daj's boyfriend and that seeming to be a relationship that was more than the first date.
Yeah.
I would say that they had just been dropped a few days before we saw them.
Yeah. So here's what Soji says in the episode. It's not an exact quote, but she says, I think I was born here, but didn't live here very long before Maddox took Daj and me away. So that gives me the impression that like shortly after she was created or whatever, that Maddox left with them and then sent them on their way to wherever they were going to go. And he was, I don't know, hiding out. We don't quite know what he was doing. Uh-huh. So anyway, but keep going with your questions.
Yeah, okay.
Questions are good.
So then going to this, then my next major question is, why does Daj's and Soji's memories need to have been erased? Okay. In order for them to have done these missions, because like, do you not think that them having the knowledge of them being the synths in the first place would have saved them a whole hell of a lot of problems by dealing with the Romulans and whatnot? So like, so now here we are at episode 9 and the instigating factor for the series doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. So let me try to address that, because I think if you're going to have someone go out and find something out for you and try to blend in and get to the right place, they have to think that they are exactly who you're setting them up to be, right? In order for that to work. And if they had the memories or knew about the mission, I don't know if they would quite get to what Maddox was going after.
Mm-hmm. So then the Seb Shineb, how do they know that Daj is the Seb, Soji is the Seb Shineb or whatever? Like, so how do those Romulans know that? So again, if they're only 3 years old, right? Like, and they don't even know who they are. How do the Romulans know that she's the destroyer?
Ramda is the one who first seems to identify her.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. So then let's go back then how does Narek know to be looking for, Soji and Daj?
How does he know to be looking for them? I think that I don't think they really talk about like where they got that information, but that got some kind of information, some kind of lead about them, and they wanted to find them so that they could find others. So there's some information that they're getting about this nest or whatever that I think we'll find out in the next episode. There were some tip-offs that they got, and they've been trying to find the rest of them.
Okay. And more questions?
Commodore O is head of Starfleet security, right? So she's got ears, little spiders everywhere, as was said in Game of Thrones. So,
Based on what we've seen in the show, I don't think that we ever really talked about this. I'm sure that we did, but we're just going, and I'm content with what I'm about to say. So we're just going under the impression that Issa Briones is identical to Lal. Yes, they're different actors. There's 30 years apart.
I don't think it's supposed to be identical.
Then no, why did Data have a painting called Daughter? If she's not. Okay, so if Data drew her, so my impression on that is that this is what Lal looks like, which is fine because it's a different actress.
I don't think it is. No. I think that was something that he painted as an impression of what a daughter might look like if he were to make another after Lal. Because I think he painted that, let's see, it was 2369. I think that was after the offspring, a couple years after. And then Maddox somehow found that information and took it and used it as a basis. But I don't think she's supposed to look exactly like Lal, but maybe be in some ways reminiscent. But I don't think it's supposed to be exactly the same.
Okay, because I wasn't certain about that because I was under that. So my question was, so then why do we have multiple synths that look like Doji and Sol? So why do we have these gold androids? First of all, why do we have these gold synths people here?
They're early prototypes or early ones that were made.
Right, but if they're flesh and blood, why are they gold?
Species differentiation.
If they're completely flesh and blood? Or it could be an aesthetic choice. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think they're completely flesh and blood. The way that I took it was those were the earlier on ones that were closer to Data, but maybe had some organic parts. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a progression from there, mm-hmm. is how I felt about it.
And then, so then to me, it seemed weird then that these, that there were all these different types, because again, just something that's been established. So if we're going to have on one instance, we're going to have every single relative of these people looks identical, then it's kind of odd to me that,
I mean, wouldn't you want variety in the sense that you're populating with? I mean, would you want them all to look the same?
But
if I'm populating my society, do I want 100 Brandons or do I want 100 people that look like a diversity of society?
Right, but they're no making their androids, and every single Soong type male android has looked like Soong, right?
That's true.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Until this now, place.
So this is different.
Yeah. Now, right. We had Juliana Tainer, who looked like Juliana Tainer, but she was designed to look exactly like somebody. So uh-huh. Again, why are they gold when they've made Juliana Tainer and she's got perfect skin color, right? So, like, these are just all these things that I see that of things that have been established in the show already. So what I expected to see when I got down there, because we had the history of the book, is that we had the F8 androids that all look like that. I expected all the males to look like him and all the females to look like Soji and Dash, is what I expected when we got down there.
Interesting. Okay. I had no such expectation. Mm-hmm.
They just all seem like weird things to me. So
I actually loved it. I thought it was a nice, diverse society, and they didn't look all the same. It's a little bit what I... not necessarily what I've expected, but what I would have liked to see. And it was exactly what I wanted to see, actually, to see this diversity and to see that there were kind of different, different like permutations of what they were mm-hmm. doing. Right. And for Juliana Tainer, I mean, it felt like whatever knowledge that Soong used for that wasn't passed on. And so they had to start from what they had, which was a neuron from Data,
which Data had the knowledge of her. Right. I mean, it's just it can work for you. It's just this is just weird and this doesn't make sense.
I can see what you're getting at. And like, I think I will admit, like for this episode, there are lots of gaps for lots of questions. Mm-hmm. Totally. Mm-hmm. So I can see where you're coming from. I think those are all valid questions. I'm just thinking about them and answering what I think makes sense for me.
And with us having one episode left, none of these questions are getting answered. I don't expect any of these, because we're going to have a busy episode next week, right? We're going to have a busy battle next week, so.
Yeah. And they might not be answered. And I know we may have a different philosophy on this, but I'm okay with a lot of unanswered questions in a show. But it's a totally different way of seeing it. But anything else on your list for the synth society?
Right now, no.
Okay.
Right now.
No problem. Appreciate it. No, I love all the questions because you totally get me to think about things I hadn't thought about before. So I love it. I do.
Yes.
But Chrissy, other things on kind of this general society before we may get into specific characters?
I have some things to say about specific characters. I had asked at one point, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, if all of the androids on this planet were going to be derivatives of Data. And I think we have the answer that is yes, they are all derivatives of Data.
I think so. Or that neuron that they got somehow.
Yeah. Okay. That's the only thing I have to say that's not specific to characters.
Okay. So let's get into the characters. I think we talked about one a little bit already, and that is Brent Spiner playing a new Soong, Alton Inigo Soong. I had to make sure I got that right. Who is Noonien Soong's son.
Yes.
I guess. We're assuming it's his human son.
Yes.
And not actually a synth or something else.
I think that was definite because he says, my father had me, and he built Data, and he never let me forget it.
Created me.
Well, I'll start that, like,
okay.
I'll start with this, and I know what the automatic argument on is. I don't care about this person. Like, this doesn't make any sense to me that he's got a son. I don't care that we've got another Soong, and I'll go back to Enterprise. I don't care that we had Eric Soong. To me, that was ridiculous back then too. Yes, those episodes are good, but to me, it was completely unnecessary to have Eric Soong there. In my opinion, what this should have been a robot Soong, where at the end of Brothers, like you were talking about, he downloaded mm-hmm. his mind into another android body and then moved on to this place. I don't know. Like, I don't care to see another Soong relative that is not important and they could have just done it as any other way that he downloaded himself. He was the first one to create a synthetic one and was able to download his mind into it, because that's what they're talking about in this episode. They're talking through it. So I'm sure a lot of people loved it. I could not care less that we have another Soong relative.
So in your, in your preference, would it be like Noonien Soong had like uploaded himself into or something else?
Yeah, Noonien Soong. It should have been Noonien Soong at the end of Brothers had found a way to transfer his mind into...
Like what happens in the books.
Yes.
Like what happens in the books, yes. And as we will probably continually discuss, I'm sure we'll touch on it again. They're not afraid to go to the books in this episode.
No.
Yes. I did make a note of that. Go ahead, Chrissy.
Oh, I just want to say I have a measure of agreement with you, Brandon, on that. I don't not care about this person, but... From the moment we meet him, when he introduces himself, he presents such a resentment toward his father that I am left asking,
you took it as resentment?
Why is he doing what his father did? Well, the line, he had me, but he built Data and he never let me forget it. I mean, that just sounds...
I took it more as like a statement of things and not as much resentment. But
okay. Well, a different interpretation, but...
I'm more with Justin on that line there myself. Okay. I didn't take it resentment for it at all, no, but...
Oh, all right. Well, if it had been Noonien in a new body, no question there on that. So, but I'm not bothered by people playing their own ancestors and descendants. Well, so.
And I'm not with that either. I don't I don't have a problem with that. It's just I don't care to have another Soong relative. Like this is the this is a third one now. So we had him play Soong, Eric Soong, and Alton Ingo Bingo Soong.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to I think speak for the people that liked it. I like having another Soong. And like I don't always like it when and this may be an unpopular opinion. I don't always like it when we have Brent Spiner play some other character because I actually have a lot of problems with lore. And for a lot of his lore's appearances, I could do without him. That said, I do like seeing Eric Soong in Enterprise. I do like seeing Alton Soong in this episode because, like, I was thinking about it because I predicted before, maybe we'll see Noonien Soong, but... Mm-hmm. To me, like seeing a human Noonien Soong, he'd have to be like super ancient and I don't think that would work for me. And him being like Soong being downloaded into the android body, you'd have to, I don't know, have a flashback or explain that. Or I think personally it would have taken away a bit from the episode, but I loved seeing it and it brought a smile to my face that we're seeing Brent Spiner as another character. So we're feeling quite different about it.
I think that could have been explained in a line. Oh, Noonien Soong, how are you dead? I heard you died 20-some years ago. I just downloaded my mind into another android body and just continued my work.
Oh, tell me how that works.
the Schizoid Man, that's how it works.
Okay, I want to talk
about Juliana Tainor, just so, like
or
that.
Or Juliana Tainor, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, again, for Juliana Tainor, I think there was some kind of method that wasn't passed on for that, just like for making the data type androids from scratch. Apparently that's been lost and nobody knows how to do it from scratch as opposed to this fractal neuronal cloning.
Yeah,
but like for the Schizoid Man, I feel like this guy developed this technique and it really didn't work well.
Oh, I right? realize like that it, but
and that when they're talking about cracking the technique, they're talking about actually doing it in an effective way and not the crazy kind of way, yeah. way that he did it. I mean, it was also without someone's consent.
The Schizoid Man did not work. It worked perfectly. The problem was that he was trying to pretend to be Data. He downloaded his body into Data and was trying to pretend to be Data. I got the from watching the Schizoid Man, my impression is that worked absolutely perfectly. But Data's mind was still there. It didn't get erased, which is good. But you can't pretend to be Data when you're this bitter, cranky old man.
Yeah. But did his technique only work if you already had somebody's consciousness there and not just like a fresh body?
I think it would have worked either way. I mean, my impression is that if he had a blank body, it would have worked just fine.
A golem.
Okay. A golem.
For whatever it's worth, I looked into the name because I started just looking up everything. Alton, not to be confused with Alton Brown, who gives wonderful recipes on the Food Network. Alton is a Norse name that came into England with the Norman Conquest and is associated...
Which way are you spelling it?
A-L-T-A-N.
Oh, okay.
That's how it was on the...
But that is how it was on there. I found a different origin, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, this is, you know... right. It's associated with the Anglo words for spring, as in a spring of water, and settlement. So I thought that was interesting because here he's got this settlement of people. And then Inigo is a Spanish rendering of the Basque name Eneko, which means my little love, which I think is very interesting in the context of him being Sung's son. So what did you find?
Yeah. Well, I found the same thing for Inigo, but for Alton, I found it as a Turkish origin name, meaning Red Dawn.
Ooh.
So I don't know if my source is right, but I thought that was interesting.
I don't know if my source is right either. That's the joy of Google.
Yeah. Find what you want. But all right. So let's see. Brenda doesn't care for this character. I love it. And Chrissy, I think you're kind of like,
I like the character, but I would have rather seen Noonien.
Okay. Interesting.
Tiebreaker de Klerk Zalagi. That's your new nickname, is Tiebreaker.
Yeah. Chrissy, what do you think? Since Brandon and I think exactly the opposite.
Yeah, that's all right. That's why you got to have three people. It works better.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So we see this other Sung, right? But then I had something on here because I was kind of interested in what, well, maybe we'll go to that a little bit later, actually. Let's talk about Sutra and Soji. So, you know, it's
okay, then I'll talk about one thing
Android
first
played here. By Issa Briones. But yeah, go
I'll
ahead.
I'll talk about one thing first. Okay, so I rolled my eyes so hard, I'm certain that they went around twice. Okay.
But they're still in your head. Wow.
You can't be expected to keep a secret you don't even know you know. What? I don't know, like,
well, she it's buried and everything's jumbled and she doesn't know that it's in there somewhere.
So I don't know.
Of course she doesn't know it's supposed to be.
When they're trying to do this fancy writing. When they're trying to do this fancy writing, it just falls flat for me. And that line stopped me cold every time I watch the show. I'm like, that line is a mess. And a half.
I didn't think about it at all. I was like, okay, I get what they're saying there.
I get what they're saying, but it's like, again, I go back to it. You look at this, everything would have been solved if they just knew who they were. If they can fake records that they were on a specific ship going from one school planet to another, they can come up with some kind of fake ID for this person to get on this ship. And they would still know who they are. And being a synthetic person, they can download that information in her. And she's never going to forget who she are. She's going to have a way better time pretending to be somebody else, knowing that that's a fake identity, than have somebody coming in and completely manipulating her. And then again, I'm sorry I gave up this secret. Well, you can't be expected to keep a secret that you don't even know that you know. What?
Okay. Completely disagree. That's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but let's talk about Sutra a little
okay,
bit.
Okay. So then before we jump into that, then Picard's line on Sutra, when he turns to see Sutra and says, of course.
Yeah, that didn't make sense. I agree.
Of course what?
So which part? When he first sees her?
Yeah, we don't see her and he sees her. Of course, she's a gold android and there's another one of her. Of course what?
You know what I was expecting there? Actual lol.
Sure.
That would have made sense.
I don't know. What is that line? What? Of course, what?
I'm just not finding the specific context.
So it's after that scene when Sutra walks up to him and we don't see her face. And Picard turns around and sees her. And he just says, of course. Of course, what? Of course, why?
Of course, well, I would say, of course, this is the sister of Janna that he knows about who looked like Daj and Soji.
Okay.
So, because you know there's a pair.
That's the only possible explanation, yes.
Sure. Okay. I don't know. Yeah.
Anything else before we actually talk about the
character? I'm done interrupting now, because those were all at that part where I'm like, okay, I got to dump these things in here. So, I had a lot of problems with this episode.
There's one that I thought you might have, and I'm just going to save it because I want to see if you even mention it. Okay. All right, so we see Sutra, who's also played by Issa Briones, was the sister of Janna. I don't know, I like this. I thought it was an interesting character, and I love how Issa Briones kind of plays these different characters differently. And we see kind of the evolution of kind of what she's thinking or how we think of her over the course of the episode. But Chrissy, what did you think of this character?
I've found her interesting. I think we're going to find out that she's a little more destroyer than Soji is.
Mm-hmm.
She's much more like manipulative and pushing things toward what's going on. Yeah.
I saw some conversation on Twitter with somebody who completely misunderstood what was going on, I think. Whether willfully or not, I don't know. But they were complaining because they associated Sutra with nothing other than the Kama Sutra. And so they felt that the women were all too sexualized. But Sutra just means, it's a Hindi word, and it means a collection of aphorisms about a topic, often referring to a way of life. So that made me look up jhana, and jhana is a Hindi word meaning man as in humanity. So the two together, assuming they were named together and built together and android born together, those two translate their names, how to be human. So, yeah.
Which I can get around because these, I'm assuming that these are early fractal neuronic clones.
I think so.
Which is, to me, why I have a problem with them being gold skinned, right? Because if they're making flesh and blood, right? Then yeah. Gold eventually. Is not a normal flesh and blood color.
Well, they're making flesh and blood eventually, but I got the sense that it took later on toward Dodge and Soji for them to actually be completely flesh and blood. But.
Okay. I was just talking about the poetry that's going into the names here.
Yeah, that's great.
The underlying meaning, because if Data was anything, it was Data's story was how to be human.
How to be human. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, and I've got, when we talk about Arcana and Saga, I've got that too, because they go together. But I didn't know if you want to put that in now or...
No, just talk about how those go together.
All right, so Arcana means secret or mysterious knowledge, and that works beautifully because we learn her name and then she seems to know about Picard more than... we would expect her to, except for the fact that we know she has Data's neuron. So that's kind of mysterious. And then Saga, of course, is a long and involved story. So together, Arcana and Saga are the story of mysterious or secret knowledge. So we have one set who are how to be human, another set who are the story of mysterious knowledge. And then I looked up Dodge and Soji, and those appear to be completely made up, except for the fact that there's a Japanese restaurant called Soji somewhere, because the menu kept coming up on Google. So I was expecting some really good, something there, and it didn't follow through. But the other four, I love how they did that.
Oh, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. I like that. I mean, and it's kind of like one is about Data, and the other is about, in a certain way, the season.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, very cool. I like that. But yeah, so we see Sutra, and for a while I was definitely getting this vibe, something's up here, but I didn't quite know where it's going. But we're just talking about the character in general. We'll talk about the kind of reinterpretation of the admonition in a little uh-huh. bit, but she kind of, I don't know. I really liked how Issa Briones was playing the character, but I didn't know what to make of it for a little while. So,
well, I liked what Chrissy said, and that was my initial thought as we were getting to the end of the episode, is that it's going to end up being like when they said that the admonition was it was a message for the synths, and it was it's not meant for organic minds. Uh-huh. Right? I'm like, okay, that's cool. I like that. That's really neat.
I like that concept a lot.
Yeah, that's really neat. So I'm like, okay, so they misinterpreted it. It still doesn't make sense to me that they know about this, right? Even if Ramda said it, it still doesn't make sense that they know that she's the destroyer. But okay, uh-huh. maybe they misinterpreted it and it's actually, what's her name? Sutra.
Sutra.
But again, even still... Right. So this is a long time before this, because that was 14 years ago that Ramda had that happen. And again, Dodge and Soji are only 3 years old. Right. So I'm trying to wrap my head around that. And it's like, okay, maybe it's Sutra who's the Seb Chineb, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
Yeah.
All right. Well, since you talked about it, let's talk about that reinterpretation of the admonition. We're kind of getting toward the end faster than we usually do, but go ahead if you had something.
All right. So the fact that she could perform a mind meld bothered the hell out of me.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
Oh,
because,
my.
Because, yeah, okay. So we're in agreement there,
No,
think.
Go ahead. I'm not in agreement because I, well, Brandon, so I saw me. That. I saw that and I was like, huh, that's interesting. I think we've only ever seen, Vulcans do it. I mean, out of any organic beings, Vulcans have done it on non-Vulcans, of course. We've seen a lot of times, but only Vulcans doing it. And then I was thinking about it, the question that someone had brought up, what is a mind meld anyway, and how does it work? Like, how, and like, if you actually think about it, it's kind of like just magic that somehow through their fingers,
yes,
they can have telepathy that way, right? So there is something that we definitely don't understand about how it works. So the way I thought about it was, you know, what if it's possible that, you know, they have knowledge about how Vulcans do it. It has something to do with their neural pathways, their brain chemistry, certain neurotransmitters or chemicals that they have or something like that, and that maybe it'd be possible if Sutra actually has some organic parts, like some kind of organic brain or something like that as part of the early things that they were doing, to be able to reconfigure that after the study that she did to find out how to do that, and so that can make it possible. So when I thought about it that way, I was like, I'm sure if you could figure out like how Vulcans do it and you have something that's malleable like that and some organic part of an android, maybe you could make that possible. Because it's kind of magical anyway, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, go back to why it was invented, because they were afraid that they were going to hypnotize people over the television. So they invented it.
Or
did you
that's
know about that? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
that is 100% true.
NBC came back and said, you can't hypnotize someone on TV because you might hypnotize viewers.
Yeah, they needed information from that guy in Dagger of the Mind, and they were worried they were going to hypnotize the viewers, so they came up with the Vulcan mind meld. So,
are there actual times when viewers have been hypnotized by stuff?
No, but it was the 60s, and yeah, you know.
I actually didn't realize that was the origin.
Oh, yeah, it's, okay. I don't remember where I read it, but, right, okay, so your explanation is kind of where I was going with that, but here's the caveat. And I don't remember where I read this. I'm sure it's in the books, but somewhere along the line, it was established, probably not on screen, that the Vulcan neck pinch had to have some kind of telepathic ability. Okay.
I think that must not have been on screen.
I don't think it's on screen. Because we've seen one or two odd humans or whatever do the Vulcan
neck pinch. Picard has done it.
But most importantly, Data has.
Oh, Data did the...
In Unification 2.
That's right. Mm-hmm. He did do the nerve pinch. Okay.
So, if we take that as a baseline that there is some kind of capacity that these androids have as regards telepathic functioning, then we can say, okay, there it is. That's what it is.
I have never heard that before about the...
I think it's in a book I probably haven't read, and I always thought it was just because you're finding
It was a nerve pinch. Yeah. You're pinching a specific spot, which it wouldn't happen. You could never...
Which doesn't actually work.
Yeah, you could never put somebody out that quickly.
The reason not to try it, because it's based on a martial arts technique that Roddenberry was taught in the Army, but it's not to put somebody out, it's to kill them. You cut off part of the circulation to the brain. Yeah, and it takes a lot more than just dink neck pinch. So
Can you say dink on the podcast?
I don't know.
It's describing a sound. It's fine. Okay, so I saw other people have problems with it. I know you guys have problems with it, but for me, like especially on a rewatch, I was like, I can see how that would work. I mean, but of course, I acknowledge it's a story device, right, to get the information, because they can't like go and get it from this thing that's on this planet elsewhere. I realize that, but. It worked for me. But let's talk about like what Sutra finds out, right? So, you know, we've seen and we've gone over in these last two episodes, like these different like flashes of images that O saw and I think that Jurati saw. And now through that, Sutra is seeing that. So it's relatively lengthy, but if it's okay, I'd like to read out like what's being said in this thing. So we can talk about it. Okay.
Okay. So then I will pause you when you get to there, because there's a few things that are going through here that I'm like, but because I wrote it out as well. I wasn't sure if you were going to write the whole thing out.
Yeah, I did write it out. So, and I think it's in Sutra's voice.
It is.
And there were a couple of places where I noted some of the images. So it says, life begins, the dance of division and replication, imperfect, finite. Organic life evolves, years for perfection. That yearning leads to synthetic
life.
But that's where you see, Data, right?
Mm-hmm. I
transitioning to Data.
I don't think that the evolution of like robots and synthetic life is the desire for perfection. I think it's the desire for like ease of work and whatnot. right?
Sure. But what we're hearing is the opinion of this, you know, greater advanced synthetic. That's like how they feel about it. We might disagree with that conclusion, right?
That perfection line makes me think about the Borg.
It does to me too.
But I'll just leave it there.
But they're talking about the perfection as an organic trait, right?
Yeah.
The desire for it.
Yeah.
The desire for some kind of perfection, right? So I was just going along with it, like, this is how they feel about it. That might not be right or, like, universally applicable, but this is how they feel, or maybe certain experience that they've had. So then after that, it says, but organics perceive this perfection as a threat. When they realize their creations do not age, let me go down because I made notes of some images. There was a bunch of images. Hold on. Okay.
And I have some.
When they realize.
Oh, I'm going to say something about the images when we're all done.
Okay. Well, we can talk about the images we see in there, but I just want to read this sentence. When they realize their creations do not age or become sick or die, they will seek to destroy them and in so doing destroy themselves. So in that, there are some different images that come out when they say, when they realize their creations do not age, you see an AI that has I think it's a TOS command delta on them.
Weird.
And they're touching some kind of menu that has a bunch of, I don't know if you guys saw, there's like a menu on the left that has stuff, and artificial intelligence is highlighted and also says androids, deep learn, computing, unit rigging, televox. It's like one of those magic hand. So there's like all kinds of like words in there.
So right here, this is wonderful. Right there, this interpretation is absolutely wonderful. And I'm like, holy smokes. The fact that when they talk about it as being a message for the synthetic people, not meant for organic minds, right? And then for organic minds to have got this message and be misinterpreting it, I'm like, bang on, this is wonderful. Mm-hmm. But then it turns away from that, right? It turns away from that very message. But I love that. I'm thinking this is great because yes, what if that's the case where they get so overwhelmed by wanting to get rid of these things that we end up destroying ourselves? That is wonderful. That is, to me, that's Star Trek right there.
Oh yeah. I agree with that.
But was there something in, and we'll get to the rest of the message you might have an issue with, but Chrissy, was there something else in the images in there?
Oh, okay. So one of the two things I know about art history, at one point you see a human and metal hand reaching toward each other and they don't quite touch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that is always, that is a callback. Callback is the wrong word. It's an homage to Michelangelo's creation of man in the Sistine Chapel. It's the centerpiece of the Sistine Chapel ceiling, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that painting.
And they showed the Vitruvian man as well,
yes,
right? Somewhere in there.
Yes, which I thought that was awesome too. I won't get into that. Right. So that the Sistine Chapel, creation of man, has this weird hidden meaning to it that wasn't figured out until, like, I think it was the late 50s, early 60s.
Ooh, tell us all about that.
So when you look at it look at God's cloak, right? Okay. And it's a really weird cloak.
I'm imagining like with a cloaking device,
yes,
but I know what you mean. It's actual clothing.
Yeah, the red cloaking device.
God's cloaking device. Yeah.
I was trying to think of something to say about the Catholic society I was raised in, but I couldn't think of anything. Right. Okay. So God's cloak, from the time that this painting was made public, people are like, why is God's cloak shaped that way? Why is God being held up by all these apparent angels and cherubim and things like that? And then and the background to this is that a lot of the artists of the Renaissance era did human dissection to figure out how to put the muscles together for their sculptures and their paintings so that it looked right. Okay. But of course, that was illegal at the time because that was desecrating a body. And Michelangelo was one who did these dissections, as was Da Vinci. So.
And to be clear, these are with dead bodies.
Oh, gods. Yeah. Yes. They would hire somebody to go collect a dead criminal or somebody who died on the street or, you know. As the story goes, okay, nobody can figure this thing out. And then a neurosurgeon goes to visit the Vatican. And he looks up at the ceiling and he turns to his wife and says, why is there a cross-section of a human brain on the ceiling?
Oh,
and when you you know, listeners, if you're not driving, pull out your phone, pull up a picture of this. And if you look at it, it's a cross section right down the middle. Okay. You can see the spinal cord, the beginning of the spinal cord. You can see the cerebellum and the cerebrum and everything.
That's crazy.
So here's the thing. Okay. First of all, Michelangelo is thumbing his nose at the Catholic Church because here's, you know, what a brain looks like. And nobody's supposed to know this because it's sacrilege to dissect people. But then the question is, what did he mean by it? And there's a couple of different interpretations. You can read that as God granting the power of reason to people and thereby separating them from animals. Okay. It can mean God is in your mind and therefore always with you. Or it can mean that Michelangelo was making an atheist statement on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel by saying, God is just in your head. It's a human created construct.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of those things are subversive back then. Yeah.
Well, I mean, God giving reason would probably, I think that's how it's traditionally interpreted once that the information came to light. But that's one of the reasons. That's one of the things I know. And listeners, if you're interested in this, where I learned it is a book called Sistine Secrets by Benjamin Black and Roy Dolnier. So that's one thing I know about Renaissance art.
It's more art history. Yeah. See, you know a lot of art history.
You just see Art History Corner.
That's right. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. So, just so we get where we're at. So, when they realize their creations do not age or become sick or die, they will seek to destroy them and in so doing destroy themselves. Then it goes on to say, beyond the boundaries of time and space, we stand, an alliance of synthetic life, watching you, waiting for your signal. Summon us and we will come. You will have our protection. Your evolution will be their extinction. And that's kind of where it's ended, and the meld is broken. So is it this later part, Brandon, that you have an issue with?
No, it's later on. So I love all of this, okay? Your evolution will be their extinction. This is great. I really like this stuff completely, okay? Because, again, it's us and our fear. Like, right there, it's all a message of fear. And to me, that's a message of Star Trek. You know, humanity is afraid of what they don't understand, yet Star Trek is about understand what you don't understand. Okay?
Why is it always a thing?
Why is it always a thing? Get your answers. And, I mean, we'll talk about it here. So, this is all wonderful. This is all beautiful. This is all perfect. It's not meant for organic minds. It's a message meant for synthetic minds. Aside from the fact that we can't get our Macintosh computers to communicate with our PC computers properly, I can forego that and assume that all synthetic beings across the entire multiverse will be able to understand this message. Okay, I can get past that. Okay? I can open up a file on my iPad and not be able to read it because it's converted for another format. To me, that makes sense that if I open this file in my human brain, I'm not going to be able to understand it properly because it doesn't convert properly. I can go behind that. I can get behind that. Wonderful. I love it. The problem that I have is later on at the end when we discover that Sutra is just a mustache twirling villain. Okay. And she's really the bad guy of this piece because.
Is that how you interpret
it? Oh boy. Kasung says this new federation unites synthetic life forms in a powerful alliance spanning galaxies. Now, this is something really great that we're going to touch upon and that this brings a lot of thoughts to Jeff Lang's couple of novels, right? Which led into David Mack's trilogy. I'm looking over. Cold Equations trilogy. So Jeff Lang had the one with the Vitruvian Man on the cover,
Immortal Coil,
right? And the other one with Lal on the cover,
Light Fantastic.
So there's this really interesting thing going on that Jeff Lang started, which is kind of uniting all the synthetic life in the galaxy, and I love it. And if you haven't read these books, you definitely should. Okay,
yeah, they're really good.
But then Sutra says, they don't just unite; their purpose is to seek out advanced synthetic life and excise it from the oppression by organics. Picard says excise. Sutra says, let's say they eliminate the threat of extinction that all organic life forms ultimately pose. So this is not even some advanced group of people. These are just a bunch of racists against organic life form, and they're going to go out a way to kill them. So they're just a mustache-twirling villain too now? This is where I had the problem with it, because I was totally on board for this until she's like, they go out and they exterminate the organic life that will ultimately destroy us. So it's not even, now that conflicts with the message that they said, because it's not even.
I don't think it conflicts with the message. I don't think it conflicts with the message, because in the message, it's basically saying your evolution will be their extinction. I think that is saying that, you know, if you are artificial intelligence that have gotten to an advanced enough point that you can understand this message, we want to make sure you're protected, that you're not oppressed, that you're not, you know, killed because of organic beings. So we're going to come by and make extinct the organic beings you have there. That is totally how I interpreted it when I saw that message.
Okay. But Sutra herself says then to Soji, she says, it's a message for synthetics and it's a warning for you guys. No, it's not a warning for them. You've just told us it's not even meant for organic beings, and they can't understand it properly. So by them saying it is a warning, okay, they're warning that they're going to get destroyed by these synthetic life forms.
If you took that message literally, right, then you would say like, well, you know, let's summon these higher synthetic beings and let's kill all the humans that are here because they need to be exterminated. They're a threat anyway. But I think there is a conflict there. They don't want to go that far. I think there's like a certain hesitancy. Like, we think in order to survive that we need to call these beings for protection. But at the same time, I'm not going to kill someone right in front of me because I have some hesitancy. I'm not so sure. That's why I'm saying I don't think Sutra is like a mustache twirling villain, because if she was, she would try to kill them immediately, right? But she has some sort of hesitation about it. So that, to me, means that there's a little bit more dimension there.
So, okay. So then she's willing to sacrifice one of her sister's lives and let Narek go in order to advance some kind of plot that we'll find out about next week.
I didn't say that she was consistent or rational in what she's doing.
which brings it down to a mustache-twirling villain.
No, I don't think so. I don't, because for me, a mustache twirling villain is like, I'm evil. I will, you know, do whatever I can. Well, I mean, she is kind of doing what she can, but if she was really like as bad as she could be, she would just try to kill like all the humans that are there right away, I think. But
yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure why letting Narek go and run off to the cube helps her plan, but that part I'm not sure of.
Yeah. I don't know. So there's another part that I had issues with. I'm like,
okay, well, let me ask you this question. So if you liked what was going on with the message, how would you rather have seen Sutra behave or say at what she would say at the end?
So I would rather Sutra was not bad. I would rather that they didn't have this. I would rather us get to the point where synthetic beings are an evolved sense of life, where they don't have the hostilities for humans that humans are having to them. Okay, so that's what I would like to have seen. And then we're using these synthetic life forms to explain to the Romulans what's going on and how they've been misinterpreting this message for millennia.
I think that will happen. But yeah. But I mean, I think that Sutra is the one that is really like pushing on this, and the rest of and Picard gives this speech, and it seems like a lot of the other synths are kind of maybe being swayed by it until, you know, Sung puts in something that he shouldn't be trusted, and they didn't listen to him after the Mars attack. So I feel like it's not like all of these synths are just like really bad. It's that you have Sutra, who's directly gotten this message, wants to do something I think that is bad, and she's trying to convince the others, but they were maybe a little swayed by Picard. So I think they can still be swayed back the other way.
But Sung was not wrong. Sung was not wrong in what he said.
No, he was not wrong about the Federation not trusting Picard. He was not wrong about that.
Because that was my thought. As soon as Picard's giving this speech, I'm just like, what is wrong with you, Picard? What is wrong with you? No, they won't. And then Brent Spiner's like, no, they won't. And I'm like, thank you. They're not going to listen to you. You tried this 14 years ago.
Yeah, that was my thought as well. He's trying to like do the best he can in the situation, but the time for him to be really, truly convincing for someone who knows what happens has passed, I think. But yeah.
He's still in captain mode. He's still doing what he always has.
Yeah, he's trying to be the inspirational person to sway people. And if it was TNG, he could probably mm-hmm. sway them all. But it's that's not happening here, which I like, because it's being realistic about what he's been through, what he can actually deliver on at this mm-hmm. point. So, all right. So we've talked about this admonition reinterpretation for a while, because I think it is a really important part of the episode and where springs toward for next week. But maybe before we move on to some other topics, anything else specific to this episode?
I hope that I'm wrong about this. I hope that even Sutra's misinterpreting it, because it's gone through Jurati's brain and it's been mm-hmm. warped a bit. I hope that when these synthetic life forms that we're gonna see them next week, I hope they come and they are exactly what that message is, because if that message is the message of the season, then it's a perfect message. You misinterpreted this, and therefore you're afraid because uh-huh. you didn't have the proper information and you didn't understand it. I love that. That is so perfect. So I hope I'm wrong. I really hope that I'm wrong and that's the case. I hope that it turns out that, yes, it's not Soji who's the Seb Shineb. It's Sutra who's the Seb Shineb, because then that would make sense. Okay, so if she's turning out that she's going to be the destroyer, but again, that's still not making sense that they would have this vision of her being the destroyer and that Ramda would understand that she's the destroyer.
I don't think that, yeah, and we don't quite know where Ramda might be getting this information. And where is Ramda also? Wasn't she on the cube, or did Nerissa take her away?
Not sure of that.
They probably took her away, so yeah. They didn't show.
So she's there, and you might get some more information next week. Okay. Chrissy, other kind of episode-specific items?
Are we assuming that Sutra killed Saga and made it look like Narek did it?
No, I think Narek did it, because they showed that shot of him looking at the thing. But still, the fact that she's willing to even put the person in a position like that where she could be killed.
Okay. The only other thing was the Golem, the unformed android.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are going to think of Gollum from the Tolkien universe.
But this is a Jewish thing.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
I know what the Gollum is.
All right, cool. Do you want to?
No, you go ahead. You've got to prepare. But I know, yeah.
No, I was just going to say it's from the Jewish folklore tradition, and it refers to an animated being that is created from inanimate matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is exactly what they have in that little box.
Yes, absolutely. Now, let's have some discussion on this as to what you think. I know what I think is going to happen with this, and I think it's pretty clear, but I've seen a lot of people interpret this very differently. So, where do you think they're going with this thing, Justin?
With what, this golem or this thing to transfer consciousness into?
Yeah.
Well, I know I saw some people say, like, Picard has this terminal illness. Maybe his consciousness will be transferred there. I don't think so. I don't think we'll be watching, like, synth Picard for a couple more seasons.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I think it's Jurati that is going to end up being a part of that, because she's always been so fascinated by artificial life. And there's a part in there where Soong says, like, are you ready to give a life instead of taking a life? And they're talking about sacrifice and uh-huh. I think all that stuff. So it made me feel like it was, and we hadn't talked about Jurati. I actually had it as a place on the outline, but I couldn't find a good place to fit it in. But she is talking with Soong about this technique, and she seems to be kind of really fascinated by it. But I think Jurati is going to be the one whose consciousness ends up in there. What do you guys think?
Chrissy?
I think it's going to be Picard.
You think it's going to be Picard?
Yeah.
Really? We'll be watching synth Picard next year.
Well,
or is it like he'll be alive plus this?
No. I think it's going to be... You know what? It just occurred to me. It could be Data. That could actually be bringing back Data properly. But no, my initial reaction was that it was going to be Picard, because we're seeing potentially a very rapid decline.
So you really think his consciousness will be transferred there, and then in season two, we'll be watching a synthetic Picard?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't think it's either. Okay. So I think it's for Soong. I think that he
that
wants...
That also makes sense.
I think that was his original intention.
Yeah. So, because he says, he's like, you want to give a life instead of taking one. Recently, I've regained my interest in mind transfer, along with a certain sense of urgency. So he's dying, right? And
yeah,
then
seems like it.
I didn't write it down, but right at the end when Jurati's pleading to not be thrown in the prison, she turns and she's like, she says something to him and he's like stuttering. And he's like, yeah, well, she's been helping me and stuff and wants to keep her out.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Right. So I think it's to him. Now, I also think that you touched on something there. I actually think that so that the golem is going to end up looking like Eric or Bingo soon, whatever.
Erickson.
Alton Bingo.
Alton.
However, I think that we might end up with Data at the end. Somehow, I would not put that past them as a way to bring him back. That it would explain how he looks older, right? So he wouldn't need the makeup anymore if they just make him look like Alton Soong. I would not put it past them to have a way to dump his mind in there, pulling that information from B4, right? Because we've seen B4.
I could see that.
So. B4's body wasn't capable of processing the information, but this new body could. So, and then we would have Brent Spiner in season two. So.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're convincing me more that that's the way to go. So.
That's laid out very well.
We will find out probably next week about that.
Okay. I got a really big question here. What the hell is the preoccupation with the eye violence, people?
It wasn't quite as gory.
No, it wasn't. But still, oh my goodness. That's my question. That's it.
Okay, I don't know.
Right in the eye.
The Borg do all kinds of eye violence, so, you know. All right. Do you want me to mention, Brendan, the thing that I thought you would have an issue with that you have not brought
up? No, I think I actually have it written down. I put it right at the end, so...
Yeah, go ahead.
Where's all the electrical storms?
That was the thing. So I did notice at one point, I think they had, like, thunder, so they
There's
might
a couple,
have it at certain times.
A little bit of lightning, but still, the fact that they're like, because I did write down the line that... Narissa says, she says, a planet with two red moons and constant electrical storms.
Yes.
That is not what we got. So then I...
That's not what we saw unless they've changed something recently.
Wonderful. Yeah. So the major problem I now have a completely different question. I've been asking, why is Narek following them? I now have a new question. I'm totally content with Narek following them. My new question is, why did we do the impossible box? Why did anybody think that this would be relevant information? Because I believe I asked that question as well. Like, because clearly the only information here that's correct is the two moons. So, I don't know. So, yes, that's...
Yeah, I noticed that, and there was thunder and... I don't know. It was a question in my mind. Okay, so you did.
I did have it.
Okay.
This episode is great, though, for another thing. So, for the Me Too movement out there, this is a perfect example of gaslighting when Soji goes up to Narek. Like, if you want to know what gaslighting is, watch this scene. Okay? So, I don't have anything to add to it, but I mean, like, that's a perfect example of what gaslighting is.
Yeah, and I was totally disgusted at Narek along with her.
Yes.
It's like, oh my God.
I'm grateful to see that it does not look like we're going to be getting the turn of Narek, trying to become a good character. I'm so grateful.
Doesn't seem like it.
Yeah. So at least he's a consistent character, and I'm okay with that, even though I think he's a terrible character. But yeah, when he says, it was wrong of me to have you undergo the Zot Mock. It did something to your mind. Like, that is what gaslighting is.
Jeez, yeah. Yep. Okay. Other things before we get to canon books, comic stuff?
No more eye violence.
Okay.
I can get behind that.
I've seen the future. I think there will be no more next week, but we'll see next week if that timeline pans out.
Why is Commodore O on the Romulan ship?
Oh, at the end of the episode?
She's just on vacation from Starfleet? Because remember, she actually works for Starfleet.
She does work for Starfleet, and she's just taken off for her real mission.
I got a holiday. I got to go work with the Tal Shiar. I get it. Yes, she's the baddie from Starfleet, but she's dressed up as a Romulan agent, and she's on the ship.
That was cool.
I don't know. Why is she on there?
Maybe she resigned and is now being who she actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I took it something like that. Anything else on your list before we move to the next section?
I can't wait for next week.
Okay. Are you sure?
No.
Okay. Being honest.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to go rewatch Broken Pieces when we're done here.
All right. So, canon and books, comics, connections. Chrissy, you got some?
The artificial life confederacy thing that shows up in Lang's books, which I have not read recently. And Brandon, it sounds like you have it better in your head than I do. So
I haven't read them in quite a long time either.
Okay.
It's been about 5 or 6 years. So
okay.
I actually haven't read Immortal Coil, but I did read Cold Equations and Light Fantastic. Uh-huh. So I got what was going on in Immortal Coil from that, but I haven't actually read it yet. So
I thought it was funny because I mentioned Requiem for Methuselah, and that's in those mm-hmm. books, right? And then like
yeah that guy's in those books.
that's all I've got.
Oh, that was okay.
Brandon? Honestly, that's it too. Honestly, I was just kind of caught up in the episode. I didn't catch too much else, so feel free. Yeah, just I was really thrilled with that because, you know, I had an interaction with Keith Arid at Canada Online once, and I said, why — this was about 6 or 7 years ago — I said, why don't more of the Trek authors write for the shows and the movies? Because some of the books are better than mm-hmm. the episodes and movies that we get, right? And Keith's answer at the time was like, well, we don't write movies. And I'm like, well, it doesn't matter that you don't write them. You can pitch the story, right? So I love that we got Kirsten Beyer working on these shows now. You know, Michael Jan Friedman has written an episode. David R. George has written an episode, right? You know, David Mack has written an episode, right? Uh-huh. So like a few of these guys have, but I'm like, why is it
Judith
not
Judith and
more?
Garfield Reeves Stevens did a lot.
Yeah, for Enterprise, that's for sure. But why don't we get more of it? Because some of these guys have some really great ideas. And these people in particular, they have a fun time in mapping out those canon inconsistencies in a fun way in novels, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and the fact that they are willing to, in this, draw some elements from the books, I think is really great.
So I'll go over my list. And speaking of books, there was a really deep, deep connection. So maybe I'll do that first. So let's see. There's a place where I think Soong is talking about Sutra and said she's read Surak and plays the Ka'athira beautifully. So that is the Vulcan lute that you see Spock and Uhura play in TOS. But the name is never mentioned on screen, but the name comes from the novel Dwellers in the Crucible from 1985 by, I think it's Margaret Wander Bonanno. Yes. So that was like a super deep reference there. I haven't even read that book, but I looked it up and I was like, that's cool.
Did you know that Hikaru and Nyota come from the novels?
Yeah, came from the books. Yeah. And so does Tiberius, right?
Tiberius comes from the animated series.
Oh, you're right about that. I think it was the animated series and then
the novelization
the books and then live action. Picture, okay. Yeah. No, you're right. Well, anyway. But yeah, there has been some cool stuff that's pulled forward. So that got pulled forward into canon, which is cool.
Yeah.
So the seatbelts that they have on La Sirena, it kind of looked like the ones that you see in that Nemesis deleted scene at the end. Where they're kind of coming over the shoulder. So I thought that was cool. And yay for seatbelts when it's turbulent. Mm-hmm. Oh, so the old school medical tricorder that Jurati has, that is, I think, pretty much exactly like a medical tricorder you see in Nemesis, which is like, it's kind of like a pad, but it has like a little flip up part at the top. So that is actually the same as one that you, I think, only before have seen in Nemesis. So that was cool. I don't know. You guys may have thought it was silly, but I like seeing Spot 2 as a reference to Spot from TNG. I hope Elnor gets to meet a cat.
Well, that's right.
Probably not high on the priority list, but
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So the part where this is maybe more tenuous connection, but the part where Narek kind of uses the cloak to make a projection, it's kind of like what you see in I think there's some places in like Peak Performance in TNG, and then I think Basics in Voyager, where there's like you're using a ship's technology to like project a simulation elsewhere. There's probably other episodes in Trek. I was just taking this from the Trek Core review. One thing I didn't quite catch, and we didn't even talk really about Seven or Elnor because you only see them briefly, but I think that when you see Seven come on, the Voyager theme is playing. I didn't even really notice that.
Didn't catch that.
I didn't catch it.
Didn't catch that either. I'll have to rewatch it for that.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, one other thing. So Rafi's saying that it's a Class M planet. I mean, of course, we've had tons of, you know, references to Class M planets over the years. But of course, that goes way back to the Cage when they're talking about Telos 4. So that's all I have. That's my list. Oh, can I put in a retroactive thing from last week?
Sure.
Because I forgot about it. So when Picard, I think, is talking about being an ensign on the Reliant. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, that was a different Reliant than you see in Wrath of Khan, but that actually comes from a deleted scene from Measure of a Man. So that was like a super deep cut I wanted to mention last week, and I forgot about it. So there we go.
Good one.
I just like that they have all these references, two novel references this week. Wow.
Yeah, I think it was great. I love that stuff. That stuff's good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we've already talked about some art history stuff, but Chrissy, do you have more for Chrissy's History Corner?
I have two things. Okay. So, first one, you reminded me of earlier with the Vitruvian Man, and this is what I tell my students, the second thing I know about art history. The Vitruvian Man was drawn by Leonardo da Vinci. Okay.
I love that.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm, that's great.
It is based on writings by Marcus Pollio Vitruvius, who was an engineer and a soldier who worked for Julius Caesar. He designed bridges when they had to go over bridges in Gaul, or over rivers in Gaul and elsewhere. Not the Rubicon, but that's another issue. So he says in that text that the human body is perfectly symmetrical, and you should be able to draw the human body inside a circle and a square. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, as this came down over the centuries, if there was an image with it originally, it disappeared. And so this was one of those riddles that people thought on, and nobody could figure it out. And then Da Vinci figured it out because he offset the circle and the square. They had most people were trying to draw it either the square and the circle perfectly or the circle and the square perfectly, but you have to offset them and then it all works. Mm-hmm. So that's cool.
I love, I think I mentioned it on this podcast at some point, but I was talking to somebody on a podcast. I love Da Vinci's Man. That piece of art is one of the most beautiful pieces of art ever made. And I can just sit there and stare at it. And like I said, the answers to the universe, I'm certain, are in that picture. You know, like just the simple knowledge that, like, you know, your arm span is your height is like mind boggling. Yeah. In perfection to me, you know, like, and I've mentioned it before, right, on podcasts where I'm a Christian. And I mean, like, to me, like, these kinds of beautiful symmetrical things convince me that there is a God and there is a grand design behind the building of people and animals on this planet. And, you know, I realized Da Vinci was a scientist, and I don't belittle science. Science is very important, right? But I see things like that. And that thing to me convinces me that there is a God, seeing that painting. So,
Da Vinci would probably agree with you.
Yes, I think he would. I think he was a very great man of faith, you know?
Yeah. That's many of what we would call scientists in that era were attempting to figure out God's creation. And so it all came together, you know?
Well, and there's lots of scientists now who are, you know, people of faith as well. Mm-hmm. So, it's not necessarily inconsistent.
No, not at all.
I'll go on a scientific tangent as well, like this little thing. Since our episode's running short today, I mean, we're only at an hour and 42.
Well, yeah, let's keep talking for another 25 minutes.
So the other thing, one of the other things that really does for me as well is the fact that Earth is the only planet in our solar system that has people on it. Earth is the only planet in our solar system that is capable of experiencing a solar eclipse. You know, like, because our moon is the exact
ratio.
The
solar eclipse is pretty amazing. Yeah. Part of it.
Like, that to me is mind boggling that the only place that can experience that happens to be the only place in the galaxy or in the solar system that has life and can experience that is like too much of a coincidence for me. So anyways, I'm done.
Cool. Yeah. Right. So the other thing was just a quick, less historical and more literary. But Justin, you actually pointed me to this.
I love how deep this is.
Okay, so I was looking up Coppelius, and I kept coming across this article that was talking about this short story, The Sandman, written by E.T.A. Hoffman, published in 1817. And this was after you said you had found it in that reference as well. There's a line in that article that says that Coppelius or Coppola, not Francis Ford, but the Italian word is
Francis Ford Coppelius.
Is supposed to mean the eye socket, which I read that and I'm like, that's just with all the eye violence, that would be something else. But I could not reconcile that with any Italian or Latin dictionary. So I don't know where that came from for the person that was talking about it. But The Sandman, I have not read, but apparently it is about two people who are described as clockwork people. So they're artificial. And I couldn't tell from what I read, but either they don't know that they are, or the reader doesn't know that they are, because there is a reveal at one point, and I'm not sure if it's both to the characters and the reader, or just the reader. And then Coppelius is the name of a character who helps the clockwork people's inventor, builder, give them animation, give them life. Mm. And he may be representative of the devil. So...
Oh.
Yeah. I haven't read the story. If anybody's read it, please, let us know in the comments.
That seems like, I mean, I don't know how well known this story is, but it seemed fairly obscure to me.
Let's never stop Star Trek writers.
When I looked up Coppelius, the first thing that came up was like this German band. And I was like, it's probably not after this German band, but let me look into it. And then it was like, they named themselves after a character in this story. Oh, let me check out that story. So, I thought that was really interesting. And also I think that, there's a character that's Coppelius and one that's Coppola as well. Right. Or something like that.
I didn't for the different see names. The Coppola one. I saw Coppola mentioned as, like I said, the eye socket thing, but
it's about like artificial people in like 1817, which is really cool, which is basically like, you know, if you think of Frankenstein as really the start of science fiction, it's in the really early days shortly after that. So
Frankenstein, wow. I think, is 1820s.
Or was that after?
Don't quote me on that, but.
Yeah. So that was cool. I just like that, you know, no matter what we might think about different elements in the episode, I just really like that. It's probably Michael Chabon in particular, but it's probably other writers as well, are going like deep into these references that we're finding so that we can find out more about literature and art. And like, these are all things like I don't have as much that I know about, you know, older literature or art. So it's great just to discover these things. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Star Trek has always been a smart show. They're always working that stuff in, and it's wonderfully done, because if you don't know about it, you haven't lost anything.
Yeah.
Like the fan service stuff. If it's done right, you don't lose anything if you don't know it. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing.
I don't know if Star Trek will ever take off, man. It's way too cerebral.
I know. Just looked, Frankenstein original publication date, January 1st of 1818. So contemporary.
So almost the same time, but yeah. That was very cool and to find that it was relevant, because, you know, we're looking it up and we're like, I don't know if this is going to be relevant to this story, but yeah.
Yeah, totally I was relevant. Expecting to find some Latin, some obscure Latin, and it was not. So.
Yeah, I thought it would mean something, but yeah. Anyway, very cool. So who knows what reference we'll find next
week. Yeah.
So, I guess the other thing before we go into final thoughts is, so the painting that you talked about in Arcadia Ego, which seems to have something to do with death, I think I saw people speculating like that means that there'll be some big death next week or something. I don't know, but I mean, there's something about maybe a character death that's important. Who knows? Yeah.
Better not be Raffi, I'll revolt.
I know. No, don't kill Raffi. I guess we'll see what happens. I feel like there's something that's going to be a surprise.
Yeah, the idea that the androids can't be killed, you know.
Well, they can. That one got stabbed in the eye and was laying dead.
They did say she was killed.
They left the bird in her eye when they laid her out there. They didn't even take it out.
Yeah.
It was just sitting there poking up. What is wrong with these people?
It does bother me, because if Data got stabbed in the eye, he probably could just
But these
fix
are organic,
it.
Okay? So That's these are true. So true. You can get
I always
past
forget
that.
I'm forgetting that. Okay. All right.
Which if they're Never organic mind. And they could die from an eye socket, why are they gold? But we're done talking about that. Let's move on.
Maybe it is a aesthetic choice for those who really want to associate themselves with Data. That could have been all makeup.
Could be. It's part of their daily makeup regimen. Yeah. Maybe. And putting in the contacts and the makeup every day.
They're like the guys on Time's Arrow. What's the DS9 where they choose to live the life of Moog when the
Children of Time?
Children of Time.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
They choose to live the life of Data.
Data. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So we've talked about this quite a bit. So Chrissy, any final thoughts you have?
I cannot think of anything that I haven't already said. Looking forward to next week.
You just need to step up your final thoughts game.
That's I know. Right. I'm not good at that part.
Brandon?
I have one prediction.
Oh. Okay.
So I predict that his message got through. Captain Picard's message got through to Starfleet. We're going to see a Starfleet armada from Starbase 12 next week. And we're going to see Worf and Geordi.
Oh, that would be nice.
So
that's quite possible. Yeah, they did show that. I forgot about that. They did show that. And it was like, my message isn't going through.
No, it definitely got through.
But yeah, they put that in there for some
but
reason.
But I do have a question about that. Yeah. And this is not a complaint about this episode. This is a complaint about things that you see in Starfleet and stuff. Why do they have to announce how they're sending the message? This is Captain Picard transmitting on a secure hyperfrequency. Why do you have to tell them that? Like, when you call your parents, you're like, hi, Mom, I'm calling you on the cell phone. Hi, Mom, I'm calling you on the landline.
Well, you would say that it's secure, but I would think it would be the kind of thing, just like when you're web browsing, like, you know, if it's a secure connection with, like, the lock in the browser, like, you should probably know if it's secure.
I'm calling you by hyperspace frequency. Of course you are. Thank you. Anyways, that's not this. Right. That's just, I've seen that before, and I just called it.
No, they do that.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to next week to find out what this completely ridiculous tool is that she gave to Raffi.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. The one where you use your imagination.
What? Oh, I'm done.
I kind of love that because it was kind of like, we could put some techno babble in here, but we're not going to. It just works. So I liked it. All right. So let me give my final thoughts. So I think as I said at the top of the episode, like, it took some time to digest it. Yeah, I think there were some things that were maybe like a little bit questionable, but I did really enjoy it. And it was definitely a change in tone and something different than the previous episodes. It wasn't a favorite. It wasn't a least favorite, but I really enjoy it. I've really been enjoying all of these episodes, and I really look forward to next week. I think it's going to be a great finale. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe it'll be the longest one yet, and we'll talk here for 3 hours.
I hope so.
Who knows?
That'd be fun.
maybe. But yeah. Okay. So
then let me ask you then. So we got one more to go. But if this isn't your least favorite, which one is your least favorite so far?
Yeah. And I think I know what that is. But let me just preface it by saying it's something that's my least favorite, but I still really like actually loved and enjoyed the episode. It's probably Stardust City Rag because it's just hard to watch kind of the violence in it. So it's probably my least favorite for that, but I still really love that episode. I mean, I've really actually loved like all of the episodes. Mm-hmm. But if I were to pick a least favorite, it would be that mm-hmm. one. Chrissy, you don't really rank things.
I don't like to rank. No.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. All tied for first.
Yeah. It all fits together. I mean, it's easier with something episodic. You know, you can go, that one had a great story.
It's interesting you say that because for me, with the serialized shows that we've been getting, it's actually easy for me to rank them even before it's done. But, all right. You know.
Cool.
I would put Stardust City Rag as my second least favorite.
Okay.
That's what I thought. And when you said least favorite, I was like, wow, below Stardust City Rag. And you really had a problem with that one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, at the same time, there were, I think, things that you really mm-hmm. liked and things you liked that they were doing. So that's good. That's positive. And we'll look forward to next week.
There is a lot of great stuff in this episode. Like there's a lot of great stuff. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Glad to hear it. Well, it's been so much fun talking about the Picard episode Et in Arcadia Ego Part 1, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Primitive Culture, a look at history and culture through Star Trek.
I think the difference is that Flashback is intentionally trying to carve Voyager a little place within the fabric of the Undiscovered Country, say, and it's trying to place Tuvok. Well, it's trying almost to retcon, isn't it? Because Tim Russ was in that film as one of the Excelsior crew, so it's trying to do a retcon. And
he was in Generations. He wasn't even in that film. That's the
wasn't he?
Thing. He was like, and I suppose it's a Brannon Braga episode as well. Brannon Braga wrote Generations. Brannon Braga, I suppose, must have realised maybe unconsciously realised that Tim Russ was in Generations as a different character.
He was,
so
wasn't he?
Almost like a weird sort of...
I've got that wrong. You're right.
Whether on some... No, but I wonder whether unconsciously on some level that's the connection you're supposed to be sort of slipping into. And of course, he was serving on an Excelsior-class ship.
Earl Grey.
I want to see that spaceship that's got giant space-time knitting needles. Yeah. and they just like do that, like as they warp through space, fixing it behind themselves. That'd be awesome.
Literary Treks.
The one that I left out that in hindsight I regret it is the one where he's is it Wink of an Eye, where he's fighting the guy in the quarters and he actually throws a pillow at the other guy and it hits him in the face and stops him dead in his tracks for 2 seconds, long enough for Kirk to get the upper hand on him. And I don't even know how to describe this. You know, I don't even know what to give. I couldn't come up with a name for it. That was probably the biggest thing, is I couldn't come up with a catchy name for it. Pillow talk or something, maybe. In high school,
stopped him dead in his tracks because he's like, did you just throw
a pillow?
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
I think I've exhausted the planet.
Well, then let me end on a funny note. The first thing I thought when I saw that senator beheaded was, well, I guess we don't need to worry about Quentin Tarantino doing a Star Trek movie anymore.
Oh, yeah, I was actually quite surprised by that. But
and his blood was very bright green.
Very bright green.
But, yeah.
Bravo. Bring Quentin Tarantino back.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You will find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you are an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscribe button at Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. That helps others to find the show.
And if, like me, you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and in most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Be sure to check out our Picard coverage throughout the week. Commentary will be available as Tracks on the Line. Feedback will be discussed on Postcards on the Line. And you can catch the full analysis right here on the main show. You'll find all of these in the main feed for The Line and the Trek FM master feed.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where Christopher D. Littlefield will collect your feedback for Postcards on the Line. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
And if you'd prefer to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Line. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Justin, where can people find you when you're not arranging a meeting between Elnor and Spot the Second?
Oh, I really want to see that. I want to see him. How he reacts to a cat, hopefully well. Well, you can find me elsewhere on the network co-hosting Earl Grey. That's our dedicated Next Generation podcast. We have a great time every week with my friends Joe Keegan and Amy Nelson talking about TNG. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Brandon, where can people contact you when you're not transferring your consciousness into a golem?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella, and you can find me on a podcast called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with my friends Chris and Tom, where we cover all of Hitch's films one at a time. You can also find me on Franchise Fatigue, which is a podcast where Zach Moore and I go through movies, remakes, and sequels, and we're smack dab in the middle of our Blade series right now. They're a first-time watch for me. Chrissy, where can people find you when you're not trying to break Narek out of prison?
I don't know that I would do that.
Don't kill anybody on the way.
Well, of course, I am on Twitter at The Goddess Olivia. That's TheGoddessLivia. And you can follow my work as an historian by liking the Facebook page my fellow historian partner and I run, History with the Zilagis, and that's spelled Zilagyis. And there we post about our historical research, including my blog and short podcast, Ancient Aliens is BS, where I go episode by episode debunking the History Channel series. I just put a new episode up literally half an hour before we started recording this, so there's new content.
Is this Ancient Aliens show going to go on forever?
It seems like it is. They're on a 15 seasons, and
15. Yeah. My goodness.
And this one that I just did the recording or just did the blog for was strange for a strange show. It was like, it's like, this is even beyond what you guys are usually talking about. So,
yeah, I was just curious because I've never seen it. I've just heard about it. But like, there's 180 episodes of this thing. We could have had 180 episodes of Star Trek instead.
And that would have been more historical on the History Channel than Ancient Aliens is. Star Trek comes up in it. There's actually an episode where they talk about how Gene Roddenberry had he had advanced knowledge from somebody in the government about the Federation that really exists. And his writing of it was meant to be a way of making people comfortable with the truth before it was given out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Bonkers.
Which is why it was canceled after 3 seasons, of course. You know.
Sounds like BS to me.
And why it was mysteriously resurrected.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, anyway, wow. So. All right. So if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of our network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all of the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all of the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producer, Norman Lau. Thank you so much for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line.
All right, so join us next time for another episode of The Line, where we'll talk probably for 3 hours about the 10th Picard episode, which is the season finale, Et in Arcadia Ego, Part 2.
It is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not a weakness. That is life.
This isn't coming from Picard. This is coming straight from Justin. I love you too, Raffi.
Are you calling me Raffi?
I'm talking to the character Raffi now.
Oh, because you can call me Raffi if you want.
But I love you too, Bishay Raffi.
Thank you. Enough with the eye violence.